D4. Number 13A.
Today we want to take the Christ in the chart, you know, that we have been doing on the ground of our chart. First the word vertical, and now we want to take today the investigation of the Christ vertical, and then perhaps next time in spring when I'm coming, we can do the Christianity and the science vertical. So the whole subject today will be the Christ, and naturally when we are speaking about the Christ, we know now that Christ and Jesus are not synonymous terms, that Christ is impersonal, and that it was a title which was given, a divine title which was given to Jesus in order to identify his mission. Now, in the same way that Jesus could take on the office of the Christ, which is a divine consciousness, in the same way, naturally, we can have that same mind as Jesus had, and take on the Christ consciousness, so that each one of us, in the measure as we embody and entertain the Christ consciousness, are also partaking of that very nature. So that Jesus was a name, Christ his office, so that if we are called, Betty or so, and take on the Christ consciousness fully, then we are Bill Christ or Betty Christ, because Christ is a spiritual divine office which each one of us sooner or later has to take on as his true consciousness. Now, when we ask ourselves, now what is this Christ? What is this consciousness? Then we get first into some difficulty. Anyway, that's the way I have experienced it in my early years, that when I was studying the textbook and was asking myself, what does Mrs. Eddy mean with the term Christ? Naturally, I could very quickly see that it has nothing to do with Jesus, but what was it? And going through the textbook, I would find so many definitions about what the Christ is that I was wondering after a while if Mrs. Eddy really knew what the Christ is when she was speaking about the Christ, because at that time, thinking still in the old Greek logic, that you must have a one definition of a term, was wrong. We cannot define the Christ, we can only tell the structure of the Christ, we can only see Christ in its various dimensions, and only from the various dimension and aspect, all that together gives us the structure of the term Christ. Therefore, no single definition in the textbook which Mrs. Eddy gives, and she gives many, many, many on the Christ, not one of these definitions is sufficient. They only describe the phenomena of that Christ consciousness from one angle, and if we want to have a whole concept of it, we jolly well have to use again the same method as we did with the Word, namely, that we look at it from the dimensional point of view. That at least we are asking what is the Christ when we look at it from the level of divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. And this is what we want to do. So if you take page 1 of your illustrative material, there you will see that horizontal to each level, we have then in the second column some short references of what Mrs. Eddy calls the Christ in Science and Health. You see that column with the title Science and Health. And we want to go through these statements quickly and get into the rhythm of thinking dimensionally about the Christ. It is interesting to see that Mrs. Eddy always introduces a term very slowly through the textbook. The great questions and problems she brings forward are usually only given properly at the end of the textbook. Up to that point, she usually leads thought out of the mortal concept, out of the moral concept, out of a religious concept, until finally, at the apex of the textbook, she gives the highest sense of a subject. And so it is with the Christ which is the Son of God, but Son written in capitalized terms. That is, Son with a capital S. Only once in the whole textbook she shows that God is not only Father and Mother, but that God also is Son. And that she shows in the chapter on Apocalypse, where she gives that great statement where she says that life is represented by the Father, truth represented by the Son, capitalized, love represented by the Mother. Here, as the only place in the textbook, she gives us the sense that God Himself is Son. So the Christ as the Son of God really means that Christ is that capitalized term which stands for truth, which stands for being itself. Though that being itself has a Christ and is the Christ, and so we have to get the consciousness of the divine being, being capitalized, the divine being being its own Christ. Therefore, we can see what really is indicated here, namely, what is the symbol of a son? The symbol of a son is that he is the heir of the Father, that he is taking possession of all what the Father has. All what the Father has belongs to the Son. It is that sense that the Son claims what the Father has, affirms what the Father has, possesses what the Father has, acknowledges what the Father has, and you get at once a sense that Christ here, when he is depicted as Son, capital S, depicts that office in being, being capital B, that office in being which says being does not only exist, like the word, but there is an office in being which affirms that existence, which affirms that existence constantly, 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 which acknowledges that existence constantly, which constantly stands up for that existence, which constantly affirms, acknowledges, is conscious of that existence, is always upholding that existence, is always, so to say, affirming the establishment of that existence. So that at once we get freed from that sense which is in us, which is wrong, that we have to uphold truth, that we have to affirm truth, that we have to acknowledge truth, that we have to acclaim truth. Suddenly we see that if we see the Christ consciousness in its highest sense, that there is something in being which is called the Son or the Christ, which says to the Word, you Word, you say you are, but I am jolly well going to affirm what you are, so that you always will be what you are, so that you can never be let down, so that nothing can ever be taken away. So in a way we can see that the Word says, I am the Word of God, I am the self-existence of God, but the Christ comes right in and says, I express what you are constantly. I affirm constantly what you are. I take possession of all that what you are. And you get the sense that being is looking after itself. So, in this way, I try to show you the transition from the Word to the Christ, showing, as Mrs. Eddy very often would say, that God is self-existent, the Word, and self-expressed, the Christ. It expresses itself. We don't have to express the Word. That's the office of the Christ, to express the Word. It's not our office to express the Word, but it's the office of being itself. That's the Son as God Himself. Therefore, we can see that under Son, we must not just understand man as the Son of God, because that would be written differently. Their Son would be written in a small s, as the reflection of that very fact of the Son as God. So, we are helped right at the beginning in understanding the Christ consciousness when we begin to see that the Christ is God and that God has a Christ, meaning that the Christ is that office which takes the Word which gives a sense that everything exists what exists, and gives to that sense the faculty that Christ says, and I am acknowledging that. Constantly, day in and day out, from eternity to eternity, I affirm it, I claim it, I possess it, and so gives a sense that what the Word is, the Christ is going to do. That the Christ is the ever-operative sense of that what the Word is. So on this level of divine science, where we have that altitude of all-inclusiveness, that's the sense of divine science, the all-in-all, the oneness, we naturally begin to see that here Christ must always be expressed through a capitalized term, because in divine science we bring every idea back to its principle. Principle and idea is one. And in the measure as we bring the idea back into its principle, we see that this is the level of divine science. Therefore, we have on this level these statements where Mrs. Eddy would say, Christ is the Son of God, capitalized, as you have as one of the first statements in this material, on page 1. Or that you would say, Christ is, what have I here? Christ expresses God's spiritual, eternal nature. Can you see? Christ expresses it. It is as if the Christ would talk to the Word and say to the Word, you have said that you are what you are, that you are self-existent. But I, Christ, come and express it, and express it, and express it, and express it, and express it. I do it. You don't have to do it. I do it. And so we gather that feeling that Christ is expressing constantly the whole nature of God. Or she says, Christ is the ideal of God, and brings again Christ back to God as the ideal of God, because we know that the ideal of God is what Mrs. Eddy says, life, truth, and love. It's a capitalized term. The ideal of God is not just some ideas, but it's the whole of God, which is God's ideal. God's ideal is that he says, I am life, I am truth, I am love. That's my ideal. And this ideal I uphold. And so what does uphold that is really the Christ. The Christ is the ideal of God now and forever. You see, you can see now the divine sign sense now and forever. It has no time. Here and everywhere, it has no place. So in divine signs, we always see that divine signs is that which does not know time nor space. Where in the ever presence of the all in all of divine signs, the concept of time and space goes right out. So if we can see clearly, and if we would accept that and be consistent in our consciousness and see that Christ expresses timeless and spaceless, the whole of God, the whole ideal of God, because he is the ideal of God. He is life, truth, and love in operation. If we would see that, that Christ is that which is that office in being itself, where being itself says, I express myself constantly as my ideal, namely as the whole life, the whole truth, the whole love, then we would no more have a feeling that we have to make God work, that we have to make these synonymous terms work, that we have to make Christian Science work, that we have to demonstrate Christian Science. Then we would jolly well see that that is the very nature of the Christ, to demonstrate itself, to operate by itself, so that life, truth, and love are ever operative in its expression as a whole ideal of life, truth, and love. This is also that Mrs. Eddy would use that wording very, very, very often in a connection with the Christ. When she speaks about the Christ, she would make a comma and put truth, capital T, so as to show that Christ is the synonymous term itself, truth. Can you see how that is the level of divine science? Always, when we bring back the concept to the principle into the synonymous term, we bring it back, we bring the idea back to its principle as one, and that's the consciousness of divine science. So that Christ is truth capitalized itself. Well, what is truth? Truth is that which says to being, I am so true that nothing can gainsay it. I am so true that nothing can destroy it. I am that truth which is indestructibly upholding the signs of being, the realities of being. I am that which really stands for being, which sticks up for being. And that gives us that sense that if we entertain this consciousness, that we feel there is always, at every moment, at every place, the Christ at work, which jolly well is responsible for that, that that which is will always be, that that which is will always be expressed, will always be affirmed, will always be acknowledging itself, so that I don't have to try to protect truth and so on. All right, we'll see the tones naturally clearer and clearer as we can compare them with the other levels of consciousness. So let's go to absolute Christian Science, and we just have to get the pedal note, really, of absolute Christian Science always first, namely that pedal note of absolute Christian Science is that we regard now the relationship between principle and idea, between that capitalized terms and their expression as ideas. That is what absolute Christian science is dealing with, to show us now how this one principle, the Christ principle, is expressing itself infinitely as ideas of that Christ principle, in individual infinite ideas. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy will speak about the Christ on this level in a completely different way than on the level of divine science, without contradicting it, because it's from another level. So here we would, for instance, see that she says that Christ is Emmanuel, God with us. You see, it gives now the relationship of principle and idea of God and man. This is the biblical expression, God with us, showing that principle, the Christ principle, translates itself constantly to the point where man is, to the point of understanding, so that the Christ is also seen as an awareness in understanding. It gives, therefore, through this Emmanuel, really the coincidence of God and man. You see, whereas in divine science you just had truth itself, just Son as God, without taking notice of how it expresses itself individually as the Christ idea. So here we have that translation from God to man, that coincidence of God and man, which the Christ upholds and says, I am responsible for that the divine principle is here and now expressed, not only as principle, but also as infinite ideas of that principle. Or she would say, often and often and often, that Christ is the true idea of God. Or she would say that Christ is the divine idea of God. Or that the Christ is the spiritual idea of God. Can you hear when... You see, I always read the textbook not with my eyes, but with my ear. Though I'm not at all musically minded, not in the least. But I listen to the textbook as music. I listen to the tones of it. And I suddenly see, for instance, that here the whole melody changes from divine science to absolute Christian science. When she's in Christian science, all is pointing and pinpointing and stressing and focusing on the spiritual idea. And I hear very distinctly that she would only use idea here in the singular, never, never, never in the plural. Because the Christ idea, or the idea which is the Christ, is something so much different from the ideas of God. And this is a point which I feel over and over, wherever I go, to Germany or to England or to America, to Switzerland or wherever I am, I always feel that Christian scientists have never really grasped the biggest thing, or one of the biggest thing anyway, in the textbook, namely the great difference between idea and ideas. And therefore, because they have never grasped that, they are usually thinking in terms of ideas, which is all right, but all right when we come next time to the point of Christianity. There we speak about ideas. But the Christ is the idea, the spiritual idea, the divine idea. And it's only singular and can only be singular because there is only one Christ and not many Christs. What this idea means, I can't explain. I just can't explain. I tried it over and over and over, and I just seem I can't explain it. I think this is something that has to spiritually grow in each one. I just can indicate sometimes what it's meant, because it's so terrifically big that people can hardly fathom it because they always want to have their own idea about anything. People like to have their own idea about their lives, about how things are going to solve themselves, how they should solve themselves, about our mission, and so on. They have their own conceptions. And if we translate that people have an own conception about anything, and translate that into the divine, and see that the divine mind has its own conception, and that's the Christ. The Christ idea, the idea of God, is really showing that being has an image in mind, an image, an idea which it wants to fulfill, an idea which is there as an ideal towards which everything goes and drives and works and operates to fulfill that goal. It's the idea is that goal-directedness which the conception of divine mind has. If we can put it perhaps this way, that then we get nearer and nearer to the idea as Christ, showing that being, the Word or God, has set the name. And that setting that aim and driving everything towards that high goal, that's the idea of God. And therefore, if we would really understand the Christ idea, we would have a completely different attitudes towards life, towards everything, because then we would see that we should not intervene with our conceptions into the plan of God, into the working out of God's own operation of itself, but we would step aside and see that God has an idea, and let that idea manifest itself and fulfill itself in God's own way. Well, this is something each one, I think, has to ponder and love and stand in awe before it and listen to it and be quiet in it and just let it grow slowly and steadily and surely. But once one has somehow touched in consciousness that God has an idea, that not we have an idea, that God has an idea reflecting itself, manifesting itself in infinite ideas, then we let go of having our own plans, our having our own wishes, our own desires, and let the idea, the Christ, work it out. It needs courage. It needs the courage of a man to be humble enough to bend one's knee before the working of an impersonal big idea. I quite agree to that. But that's what is asked in Christian Science. Here, on the absolute level of Christian Science, Mrs. Eddy would also say when defining the Christ that Christ is the divine idea of God leading into all truth. Into all truth, and you see there, truth is written in a small T, not in a big capital T. Because here is the relationship between truth, capital T, leading into all truths. She could even have put it into the plural, into all truths, so that it is that Christ gives now that omnidirectional expression of the divine principle of being, and shows that that divine principle in divine science is its own self-expression. But by that own self-expression, it expresses itself on the level of absolute Christian Science as leading into all truths, small t, into all truths, if we want to say so. Or she says, Christ furnishes us with absolute evidence. Can you see absolute evidence, absolute Christian Science? In divine science, we don't need that. We don't need to have evidence because in divine science, where you have just the one and all, there everything is self-evident anyway within itself, where truth is knowing itself as its own truth, and so it not even needs the evidence or the spiritual proof of anything. So can you see now how here in Absolute Christian Science the description of the Christ is very different? It is that where she tries to show that the one Christ of divine science now in Absolute Christian Science expresses itself in infinite truth, in infinite evidence. Because the Christ has an idea, and it is jolly well going to work out this idea and bringing out every situation as a true situation. And so the Christ is depicted in this way.